Hi, this is John Udell. Joining me for today's podcast is Rajiv Gupta, CEO of Securant. His new company, which has been operating in stealth mode for a couple of years and just announced today, is focused on the thorny problem of fine-grained access control. In this conversation, we discussed the role of XACML, the extensible access control markup language. We talked about how you wrap or intercept legacy security policies in order to hoist them out of application logic and get them into the network where they belong. And we talked about the relationship between fine-grained security, which focuses on specific resources, and coarse-grained security, which deals with things like users and roles.
Hi, is it John?
Yeah.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Very well. It's been a long time.
It was maybe 2003 you were with Confluent. Does that sound about right?
Right. Exactly.
Which was swallowed by, let me think, Oblix, which was swallowed by Oracle. Is that how it went?
That's right.
Hard to tell the players without a scorecard. And now you are Securant.
That's correct.
One of the things I wanted to ask you to help me triangulate on is the definition of terms like policy enforcement point and policy application point, because I hear them used in a variety of similar sounding but not necessarily identically defined ways. But the funny thing is that I found this article on Phil Wainwright's site from 2003, and the title is The Forgotten OSI Layer 6. And they argued that Confluent was operating in this forgotten layer of the OSI stack.
Right.
And what's really funny is that what prompted me to look back into all of this is that based on what I saw from your announcement and the information that's on your website, the closest analog that I have to what you guys are doing is Layer 7.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went back and looked at this article, it occurred to me that perhaps Layer 7 should have been called Layer 6, which is kind of reminding me about how kind of ludicrous a lot of these definitions are.
That is true.
But anyway, we should sort of rewind and try to establish some context here. So let me ask what I think is a pretty basic and simple question, but one that I have yet to hear an answer to that I can understand.
Okay. That's a great setup, isn't it?
It is. So here's the question in simple terms. It's pretty straightforward to see how it's a bad idea to have security policy wired into application logic, right? And so everyone can sort of relate to that. You want to be able to change the policy external to the application code and have multiple applications referring to common policy. And, you know, that's, you know, kind of mom and apple pie. And everyone can sort of look at that and nod their heads and say, yep, that'd be great. You know, and then everyone goes back to work where they're maintaining a bunch of legacy applications with hardwired security policies inside of them. And that, to me, is the disconnect. I spent a fair amount of time sort of looking into what Layer 7 does, and you can tell me whether or not you think that that's a close analogy to what you guys are doing. But in any event, the general question here is that, sure, if you start from scratch and you're building new applications and you have an architecture which enables web service XML data flows to be controlled through intermediaries which can enforce policies, then it all makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even seem to be particularly hard, other than you have to have web services infrastructure and all of that stuff in place. But people are getting there.
Right.
I can see all that from a greenfield perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I just haven't really heard a good story from a real-world perspective where people are sitting on all these apps. And, you know, I mean, the best I've been able to come up with is, so you sort of spoof the identity credentials back down to the legacy apps that they're expecting, and they continue to do whatever internal policy application they've always been doing, and so things keep working. But how you get from there to externalizing the policy, actually ripping it out of the applications and placing it under the control of network intermediaries, you know, I just don't see a shortcut to that.
So first of all, there is no magic, right? So what I'm going to tell you is based on practical experience
mm-hmm.
with some of our customers. So we have a number of customers, some of whom are production live, and many of them obviously can't be named because they don't want to be named.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones who can be named are Qualcomm and Credit Suisse.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to describe to you is through experience. So let's take a legacy environment. So actually, before I describe to you how, the motivation is something that presumably that we are in sync with, right? So let's say I have Documentum, right, as an app, or I have SharePoint Portal as an app, right? What enterprises are saying is, I don't want to have 48 different policy silos, right? Each different application, custom app or packaged app.
Yeah, that doesn't even need to be argued.
So the question is the how, right? Okay, and so let me tell you the how, and then also let me give you some anecdotal evidence that it doesn't have to be as complex as it sounds. So there are really three different ways of doing the how. One of them is that in the application, so again, let's talk about something that is a recent legacy as opposed to old legacy, right? If the application is recent legacy, that is written on a well-defined standardized component model like J2E or .NET.
Okay.
I'm calling that recent legacy. In that case, the standard application platforms provide a standard interception mechanism in the platform itself. So for, you know, so you have the JCC, interface, for example, and .NET, there are similar interfaces where you can essentially intercept the request for the application and apply the policy at that point.
Okay, but I guess I'd say that for some definition of standard, there are interception mechanisms that go all the way back to the dawn of time.
Right. Yeah, like, for example, for MQ series also, there's a standard interception mechanism, right? So if the platform does provide a standard interception mechanism, then we have the notion of an agent or adapter or PEP, the policy enforcement point, that attaches itself there, gets the request, applies the policy, and then, you know, either pass it on or not. So that's one way of doing it.
If the application logic is expecting internally to be doing certain things, then it still expects to be doing those things, right?
Right. Good point. So application logic is expecting it. Then, as you described, then you have to neuter that, right?
And you have to do that times the number of silos that you have. There's just no way around it.
So you have an agent or a PEP, policy enforcement point, per silo that you have, exactly, per application that you have.
If it's the case that the application isn't going to work unless it satisfies its own internal policy notions, right, then you can spoof what comes into it, but ultimately it has to go through its own process, right, or you have to change that process, unless I'm missing something.
Let's actually go through that in more detail, right? So let's say there's an application that has, let's say, two different call points, two different method calls, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what you need to do is you need to protect through policy under what conditions, under in what context, by which person, for what values, a method call is permitted, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the application, as you said, is trying to do the policy enforcement within the application itself, then either you can neuter that is, the value you send is always permit, right? But you're actually applying the policy outside to decide whether the invocation should go through or not. That's what I meant by neutering the existing policy enforcement within the application so you can enforce it outside the application.
Okay.
The other thing you might do is, assuming there isn't a natural interception point, but the application is storing its entitlement decision in a repository,
right,
then essentially what we would do is we would read and write into that repository, right?
Right.
And allow the application to still read and write from the repository as if it's doing its own thing, but the decision it's enforcing has been determined outside.
That case is a little bit, at least for me, is a little bit easier to conceptualize. The first case, though, the spoofing with always permit, it seems to me that gets hairy. It could get really hairy because there could be quite a complex surface area that has to be mated with in order to actually have the result of always permit.
I agree with you, Ken. And one obvious example is if the application expecting to use the user identity,
yes,
right, not only for entitlements but also to, for example, read the account value,
yeah,
then you can't. Then you have to pass the identity, otherwise, you know, how is it know which account to process, right, data from?
And this will be fairly typical, right?
Actually, it's not always the case. So we have instances where we have them in neutering, but we also have instances where we do the second mechanism I described to you, where we read and write into the application-specific repository.
Yeah.
And there's a third one as well, which is more invasive, in that if the application is actually making these calls for its own entitlement, then you would have to wrapper those API calls and pull them outside.
Yeah. Right? In all of these scenarios, it strikes me as it's doable, right? Everything's doable. But from the perspective of vendors such as Layer 7 and yourself coming along and saying, well, you know, we've got a packaged solution to this, it seems to me that it's got to, under the covers, be a sort of a case-by-case enumeration of a bunch of very specific interception and spoofing scenarios, right? And it's just going to come down to kind of coverage, right, of the initially most prevalent ones and then, you know, down onto the long tail. Is that the way to think about it?
I think that's fair.
Okay.
And let me give you one perspective and two anecdotes.
Okay.
In the case of one of the financial services companies, one of the use cases they had was, oh, by the way, so I'll give you three anecdotes and one perspective. So
it's like Monty Python. No, four. No, five.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I find that I can absorb information better when I have anecdotes.
Oh, it's much better. I'll take an example any day over abstractions.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The three anecdotes are, one of them is we do have today these PEPs, policy enforcement points, which are out of the box for, and that we deployed commercially, production-wise, for particular environments like WebLogic Portal, like WebSphere Portal, like the JetSpeed open source portal stack,
mm-hmm.
Like SharePoint Portal. So those we have deployed without having to make any change to the application itself.
Just to make sure I've got that straight, there's a kind of a protocol or a regime that is particular to, let's say, WebLogic or WebSphere. But on an application-by-application basis, isn't there also substantial variation in the data that's flowing through that protocol, which would have to be accounted for this to work?
Maybe the two things talking. One of them is you're saying, if it's not one of these, if it's not Documentum, if it's not SharePoint, if it's not one of the ones that for which you have a standard PEP,
yeah.
then I have a different set of issues.
But even if it is, right? I'm saying, even if it is...
Second thing you may be saying is let's say it is... It is, let's say, WebLogic Portal, right?
Yeah.
There what happens is just WebLogic as an example, it exposes an interface whereby you can externally control which portal managed resource, like a button or a tab, is going to be presented to a user coming in at the portal.
Right.
There isn't as much semantic difference between different deployments of WebLogic Portal. There's semantic difference between deployments of WebLogic Portal, WebSphere Portal, and non-portal things, but within the WebLogic Portal world,
okay.
You can do generically. And we've done generically.
Okay.
The second anecdote is another firm, what they wanted to do, and this financial services, what they need to do is they needed to erect, manage, enforce, and audit Chinese walls, right?
Yeah.
That is, in a broker cannot communicate with an analyst,
yeah.
Right? And they wanted to do this over you know, any communication channel.
Okay.
So we produced an agent, and they were planning on using Jabber as you know, which is a
yep.
Yeah. So you were Jabber, right? So we actually created an agent or PEP for Jabber. Literally took less than 2 days for us to enforce policies. You know, things like when John is trying to set up an IM session with Rajiv. You know, John's an analyst and Rajiv's a broker. So therefore, either disallow it or you know, put a disclaimer in the header. Or when John is trying to enter a chat room, a persistent chat room. In which Rajiv has been there in the past, and since John and Alison Rajiv is a broker, disallow that because that's a surreptitious communication channel, so on and so forth. Right? So,
in this example, where in the pre-existing case was the policy about John and Rajiv living?
In this case, there wasn't a pre-existing policy, right? So in this case...
Oh, well, okay. Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So in this case, the Jabber server just exposed the interception points, if you will, and then we attach ourselves, and the policy is defined enough. So Jabber natively didn't have it.
Okay. And they had not previously imposed one on top of Jabber.
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
The third anecdote. This is another firm. Now, this is an interesting one. Between the time and the reason I'm mentioning this to you because it's also to give an indication of it doesn't always have to be complex or you know, time consuming. This is one of the largest banks in the world. Between the time they selected us. And they went production live. Yes, production live. And they used us in the context of, you know, existing policies for an existing environment. When they went live, they had 160,000 policies for tens of thousands of users was 10 weeks, right? Production live, which includes the user acceptance testing and so on and so forth. So the integration, the ability for us to read out the existing policies, to connect with the existing attribute stores of users, the resources, and so on and so forth, is rich enough that they could contemplate this and actually go live, like I said, 160,000 policies in 10 weeks' time.
And this was done as a consulting engagement, it sounds like.
They had their own development team, and we essentially helped them okay. with that, but this is done primarily by them.
And was this an example of the spoofing style or the repository interception style?
This was an example, actually, of neither. This was an example of the wrapping of the API style.
Oh, okay.
They had existing policies. They had existing local and global repositories of data and information,
right.
Attribute information, that they wanted to find the policies over and absorb and reuse the existing policies.
Okay.
And they wrapped their existing APIs, so they were calling our APIs instead.
And it was already the case that there was a sufficient amount of choke pointing of the flow of control that it was, you know, that you could get to the place or the small number of places where you needed to be.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Okay. And that might or might not be true for a given situation, but in this case it was.
Yeah. The reason I mentioned this anecdote is obviously, you know, mileage is going to vary. But in many cases, when the existing application is already enforcing entitlements, very often existing entitlements are invoked using a set of APIs, which I realize that this is more in intrusive, you know, than the other instances. But if those other instances, you know, like for example, natural interception points or, right. or reading and writing from the entitlement repository, but if those are not feasible, then, okay. then this is also feasible, and actually, like I said, we have you know, they're commercially live. It's not always the case that if the application already uses a legacy, a custom developed entitlement, that it has to be, you know, baroque or gnarly and difficult to, you know, to wrap up the APIs.
But if it's been around for a long time and been through multiple generations, it very well could be.
It could be.
Yeah. So, okay, so now let's rewind and talk through how, if I am this company and I step back and I see, well, we're doing it, you know, in the style of spoofing or API wrapping or repository interception or some combination of those things, you know, there's a approach they could take, which is, well, we can just dive in there and get to the relevant choke point and do this ourselves, right? You know, or we can team up with someone who has policy-driven solution to help us do this, right? And then there's a choice as between various vendors who offer things in that category. So,
and that was my perspective, right? Remember, I had three anecdotes in one perspective.
Yeah.
And the perspective is that the interest for them to still use a product such as ours, even if they had to go in and you know, and for example, you know, be intrusive, mm-hmm. is twofold. One of them is, even if they were being intrusive, they would still need to build a lot of the externalization logic, the policy resolution logic, the mm-hmm. auditing and reporting logic mm-hmm. that comes with standard-based products such as ours.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And second thing is, and what we're seeing with many customers, is they are deploying our administration and resolution as essentially our entitlement management essentially as an infrastructure service, and making it available to the application's lines of business to then essentially subscribe to that service, right? Mm-hmm. And subscription in some cases may be natural interception, some cases may be reading and writing from repository, some cases might be obviously new apps, and some cases might be you know, wrapping of APIs.
Yeah.
Right? So at least they have the prayer of having some form of consistency. So, you know, think of you know, again, not every company is going that route, or at least at the same speed, but think if I'm deploying a service-oriented architecture, right? So now I have entitlement service as a SOAR-compliant service, which I can then leverage across my apps.
Yeah.
So the apps don't have to do a bunch of the work, and I have consistency across them.
Yeah. So the ante here, to use your system, is that either your applications already do or can be brought up to the level of speaking, basic, SOAP, and WSDL, and...
Oh, no. In this particular case, there is no SOAP or WSDL necessary.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
So this is not only for web services. In fact, you know, many of our deployments are for existing message-oriented middleware. In some cases, it is existing, you know, back-end trading apps, you know, which are not, don't have SOAP interfaces. So it's not only for SOAP and WSDL and web services.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Our product set does have the ability to be part of a SOAR architecture, right?
And it talks to itself that way, probably.
It talks to itself that way, and it exposes SOAP APIs as well,
yeah.
in case that's what you wanted. But
yeah.
it's not a requirement.
Okay.
That you first have to SOAP enable your service, however you do it, before this can, you know, before you use something like this.
Okay. Now let's kind of revisit this terminology. So you've got pips and PAPs and PEPs and things, right? I mean,
right.
I've seen, so that would be enforcement and application, and I forget, what's the I?
So PAP is policy administration point.
You call it administration, okay.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, that is a standard terminology.
It is?
For, let's say, XACML, the Access Control Markup Language.
Okay.
Which is OS standard that we comply with.
Okay.
XACML, at least that's how I call it, XACML, but it's XACML.
Okay.
The standard terminology there is think of it as a three-tier architecture, right? The top tier is the administration, right? The virtually central view of administering policies and then getting the audit and reviews of the policies, right?
Yep.
The second tier is a distributed resolution, which is the PDP, the policy decision point,
yep.
right? Which are the rules engines which resolve these policies in real time based on the user context, based on if the request is coming in, based on elements of the message itself, you know, what value you're trying to commit, what action you're trying to perform, based on using existing repositories, maybe we have some user information, may have some resource information. So you can simply point to a distributed, wherever you might have LDAP, AD, databases, whatever it is, maybe you have to make SOAP calls, maybe you have to make Java calls, where you get some of the attribute information, you know, but
okay.
what's John's geography, or what's John's age, or you know, is John the so additional examples, but the kind of distributed PDP layer is the second tier, which does the policy resolution, right? And the third tier is a policy enforcement, that's a PEP.
Has anyone done a kind of a reference diagram which maps out these definitions and their interrelationships and then maps from the various well-known vendor offerings to those concepts?
So there is, and the interesting thing is that the notion of PAP, PDP, PEP, and PIP, the policy information points. So XACML has these notions of PAP, PDP, PEP, PIP. But the source software or Layer 7 or AmberPoint, any of these guys, you know, who only focus on web services, they don't comply with XACML. They don't have XACML policies or, you know, the find and access control. They're using this terminology of PAP, PDP, PEP for other aspects of QoS over web services. So in other words, you may end up having a PAP for administering QoS policies from source software, or you may have a PAP for administering, fine-grained access control policies from Securent. So what we have is our PAP, you know, not only has a UI, but all the functionalities exposed as SOAP services, so that you can integrate this with an existing management stack or management plane if you have one, and if that's what you'd like to do. In fact, you know, one of our customers has done it that way, that they are essentially invoking our administration functionality from their existing management console.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that from your perspective, the master conceptual framework is XACML.
No, the master conceptual framework for access control, find access control, is XACML.
Okay.
But the terminology of PAP, PDP, PEP has been used before in other uses of, you know, other environments as well, right? Like I said, for people trying to specify QoS policies on web services.
With Layer 7, which I'm maybe the most familiar with, it's very definitely being used also in the context of access control. And their enforcement points and application points are all about, if you will, sort of arbitraging the differences between pre-web services standard identity and authorization schemes and web services identity and authorization schemes, but it's all about access and entitlement.
Yeah, but the difference is that, and by the way, I'm reasonably familiar with Layer 7 as well. The folks who are doing access control today are doing coarse-grained access control. Rather than Layer 7, we can even talk about, say, some of the players in the identity and access management space, like CA, right?
Okay.
They are doing very coarse-level authorization. CA did try and repurpose that for fine-grained access control, resource-specific access control, context-specific access control, and failed.
So your definition of coarse-grained is per user per role, and your definition of fine-grained is per resource?
Is not only per user per role, but also including resource-specific information.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
okay.
So, you know, the protocol example is a coarse-grained would say whether you, for example, are allowed to even, you know, make a request to my, let's say, my content management system, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fine-grained would say, you know, allow him access to this particular electronic medical record,
mm-hmm.
provided he's the patient mentioned the record, or he's a primary care physician of the patient mentioned the record,
mm-hmm.
or if the patient is less than 18, he's the guardian of the patient mentioned the record, right? That's the protocol example, right?
Okay.
Where it's not only user-based, because if it's only user-based, I can enforce it centrally, right? Because, you know, who you are is who you are, right?
Yep.
But what you can do is specific to the resource you're accessing, to the specific context within which you're making the access, you know. So John has access to the account transfer function of one application, therefore he shouldn't have access to the, you know, accounts payable function of a different application, right?
Okay.
So, by the way, you know, this is a question that, you know, customers have asked us, you know, so if I have fine grain, why do I need coarse grain, right?
Or in particular, do I need two different infrastructures, you know, side by side?
And my response is, you know, the coarse grain authorization, you know, they serve a particular function. So what they do is they do sort of first cut of are things allowed at all, and fine grain does, you know, right, like as a resource specific. Over time, if I had fine grain, do I need coarse grain? I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go in and say, hey, I'm a superset of Layer 7, not only because I'm applied to not only web services, but, you know, more general infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
And I'm fine grained, but and because I'm also seeing that customers who already have, you know, actually I don't have any customers who deploy Layer 7, but I have customers who deployed, for example, CS products, right, or
okay.
Oracle's products,
okay.
right, who are in the traditional identity and access management space. They are deploying us in conjunction with, to complement and supplement what they're doing in the coarse grain side,
okay.
know, what they're doing for web access management, or what they're doing for some of the sort of identity management specific things, you know, like provisioning and so on and so forth.
So it sounds like, in fact, you, in some cases, may come to the conclusion that you do need to have parallel infrastructures to deal with the coarse-grained and the fine-grained stuff side by side.
Correct. In some cases, you may come to the conclusion that, for my purposes, coarse-grained is all I need. In some cases, you might reach the conclusion that, if I have fine-grained, I don't need coarse-grained. All the three combinations are possible.
Right. The whole notion of fine-grained access control and policy enforcement is interesting from the perspective of, regardless of what technology you have in place to make it possible to assert all of those detailed policies, you come up against the practical limitation that human beings have a really hard time holding in their heads these permission matrices that are thousands of objects times thousands of people times thousands of individual rights. That's an intrinsic hard problem. Some administrator is presented with some multidimensional matrix and is in the business of ticking off the intersection of this, that, and the other axis, what is or isn't switched on. You get to a point where the thing that doesn't scale is the human brain that is having to stare at that matrix and make decisions about what to tick and not tick.
Question for you is where are you headed with that? That therefore, finding entitlement management is hard, or we shouldn't do it, or what
does scale is the ability to capture and analyze logs, potentially extremely detailed logs, and that what may be the reality is that we'll need to just make a command decision to assert proactive control over some priority subset of all of that stuff, but we will assert post-facto control over the rest.
I don't buy that at all.
You don't? Yeah, okay.
I completely don't buy that at all.
Okay, good. Good.
So let me tell you why. So right now, I'm currently in D.C. I was invited to speak at the Global Security Consortium.
Mm-hmm.
So there's financial services firms and DOD, intelligence company and others, as a subject matter expert on entitlement management.
Yeah.
Their top agenda item was entitlement management.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So for them, it is not sufficient for me to say that this is what happened, because that what happened could have been a soldier who was shot.
Yep.
I need to be able to control what could happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just forensics is not good enough.
It's definitely not good enough for life and death situations, and it's definitely not good enough for reputation-destroying information leaks. No question. Are there things that it is good enough for?
But financial transactions are good enough, right? Any privacy-associated information is not good enough. But let me also challenge the assertion that it is not humanly possible to specify those policies.
Okay, good. Because,
right?
Yeah, I'd like to hear a strong counter-argument to that.
And by the way, we have practical experience with that. This is not a theoretical exercise, right? So the way you get around this kind of combinatorial explosion is to have an information model,
mm-hmm,
where you can, for example, have users, and you can group users arbitrarily. You can have attributes and users, attributes and groups. You can have resources. You can have attributes and resources. So, for example,
you can chunk things. Absolutely,
you can chunk things up, you know, with attributes, right? And
mm-hmm.
and now I can define these policies. So that's one thing. The second thing is, as happens in life, right? You know, or with social systems, right? It is not possible for the person in the White House to make every decision about every household in the country, right? The way you do that is you have a distributed model.
You have delegation,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing would apply here,
mm-hmm,
right? So in an enterprise, I, as a compliance team, may have a certain set of policies, and then I delegate the ability to define other sets of policies, which may be in conflict, right? Because if I allow autonomy in policy definition, I have to anticipate conflict, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I delegate to the lines of business teams to specify their policy. The line of business specifies to the admin teams, the security team, so each different entity can come and define their notion of policy for a particular resource.
Mm-hmm.
But then if the infrastructure, A, has a richness of specifying them, and B, has the ability to anticipate conflict and deal with it, that is one way of getting around this notion that the complexity is too large for administrators to handle. And by the way, if you ask me to specify the ACLs, right,
yeah,
I agree with you. You know,
yeah,
that clearly is not scalable, that clearly is too complex.
Yeah.
Right? The whole point is to move away from that. For me, I'm describing to you a practical example. You know,
yeah,
this particular customer, one of the largest banks in the world, went live with 160,000 policies. They went live with that. They had that information.
So is what you are claiming that, setting aside anything to do with web services and setting aside anything to do with the architecture of interception and policy enforcement, that you've done something in the area of enabling the management of complex scenarios of fine-grained entitlements.
Absolutely.
And that is part of, or maybe the dominant value that you're bringing with this product? Is that what the claim is?
That is exactly right.
Ah, okay.
What we call is active policy management,
mm-hmm.
and we call it a deep architecture. So you know, that's a marketing term, but it's the distributed externalized entitlement platform.
Right? Okay.
That's the DEEP. And the active policy management is this kind of central, delegated, non-procedural, declarative policy specification, having that be taking care of all the distribution of the policies to the appropriate points, taking care of the distribution of the entitlement decision to the appropriate point, so that you see sub-millisecond latencies. You can have thousands of these in a low inbox. So it's not only the policy distribution itself. See, distribution is easy. Managing the distribution is hard.
Okay. So if somebody says, all right, well, I'm familiar with any number of systems that have users and that have groups and that have roles and that have rights and permissions and that have the inheritance of those things and delegation and so on, right? So, you know, I'm familiar with all of these constructs.
Right.
How are you combining those known ingredients in some way that is more useful?
What I mentioned is the active policy management, which is bringing them together in an inherently ground-up distributed architecture, so that I have this three-tier model. So I have the ability to connect up with existing dynamic repositories of attribute information that I want to use in my rules, keeping them on consistent high performance and so on and so forth. So it's actually the distribution management is really where we bring our IP there.
That sounds tantalizing, but it also needs elaboration. can you turn that paragraph into like five paragraphs? I couldn't turn around and explain what you just said to someone.
The question is that, okay, so so you claim you have a rich information model, right, of users and groups, and all of them are attributed and scoped,
mm-hmm.
and resources, arbitrary resources that can be grouped and scoped and attributed and have defined roles and rules, rich set of roles and rules.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say I have all that, I have delegation, I have the ability to resolve, to have autonomous creation of policy, resolve policy conflicts in real time. So let's say I have that. What is the additional secret sauce that you have, right? And I'm saying the obvious secret sauce I have is the active policy management piece, which allows this kind of a rich information model to be deployed in a highly distributed environment where we take care of giving you the sort of the virtually central administration and virtually central view of this distributed policy architecture, but distributing the policies and distributing all the information to the right place, the right, you know, to the policy decision points, which may be...
When you say active, it implies a distinction with other things that are not active or less active. So how do you mean active?
So by active, I mean things like detecting that the policy might say, you know, if John is a member of the PR group, so someone may make a change in the LDAP somewhere,
mm-hmm.
so detecting that change has occurred and therefore John's entitlement has to be changed, right? So making sure that the information is actually sent to the appropriate place. I may make a change in policy, making sure the policy itself, the Delta policy, is sent to the appropriate policy decision point, right, as opposed to broadcast to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that the policy decision point actually makes the policy decision, and the decision itself, the yes or no, is sent to the appropriate policy enforcement point, so that when your request is made, the information is available right there for high performance and so on and so forth.
Okay.
That's something by active. So taking care of the active distribution, taking care of the active, you know, monitoring that things have changed, taking care of the active abstraction of information so I can have a common point of review and audit. For you to be able to come into this policy administration point and ask a question, what all does John have access to today? What all does someone with this role have access to today? What all someone with this attribute have access to today? What roles do I need to access a particular resource? So
okay.
All the information has to be pulled together in you know, and that's what I mean by the active. It's easy to say.
No, it's totally not easy to say. That's what I'm noticing here is that, you know.
Good point. So believe me, if it's difficult to say, it's even more difficult to do, right?
I was going to then broach the question of what sort of interrupt scenarios might be possible here, but I don't even want to really go there because it just, you know, it's just too complicated to talk about.
Actually, it's not. It's not. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because we do only entitlement management, and we do it damn well. right? But we don't do, for example, the traditional identity management, establishment of identity and single sign-on, those kinds of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we need to make sure that what we do is quick and easy to integrate, right? I mean, that's how I get, you know, going from a virtual stop to production live in 10 weeks, right? Because
yeah.
I have these very modern interfaces. So I have loose coupling with the identity and traditional access management components, right? The provision components. So
okay.
We have it, you know, with the HP products, CA products, IBM products, Sun's products, Oracle's products, making sure that each of the components itself, the PAP, PDP, PEP themselves are black boxes with open sign interfaces, right? So that tomorrow, and that's the value of standards, of course, tomorrow if someone wanted to use some other XACMA compliant PDP, they could use that instead of mine if they so wanted, right?
Okay.
So yes, there is an interoperability scenario between us and other people who are compliant with XACMA, for example, or between us and other piece of infrastructure that come beneath us, you know, behind us, ahead of us, those kinds of things.
Okay.
So it does make sense. And the way I think about it is what you bring to the table is you get the best of breed without losing the best of an integrated stack, right? Because you can be essentially integrating it in the customer environment for the rest of the piece of infrastructure the customer might have.
To what extent is there a lot of meeting on the common ground of XACML at this point?
It is the de facto standard for entitlements. Oracle, IBM, they've all led support for it and claimed to comply with it. Remember early on, authentication was within the apps, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know if John Udell in one was John Yu in the other was, you know, was Jay Udell in the third, right? And I had a problem. So, you know, the ISVs externalized the authentication so I could have a consistent way of enforcing authentication. Similar, the same thing is happening in entitlement.
Right. You guys are launching this week, is that right?
Normally you announce, and then sometime later you have a product, and sometime later you have customers, right? So this time I did the other way around. In fact, even in the funding, I did the other way around.
Yeah?
We have a GA product. We have customers who are in production, right? So some of the largest banks in the world are in production with that product.
And when did you start?
I started the company in 2004.
Okay.
So essentially after Comptroller acquired by Oblix.
Yeah. Okay.
John, it's a pleasure as always.
Take care.